Hi everyone, this is Glenn Keane and you are listening to the Animation Addict podcast with the Rotoscopers. They are awesome.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 83, Mickey's Christmas Carol. They're just actors. Welcome to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. We're your hosts, Morgan Stradling, Chelsea Robson, and Mason Smith. Say hello, my fellow co-hosts.
Hello, everybody.
Bah, humbug.
So for those of you who are new to our show, the Animation humbug. Addicts... Excuse you, Scrooge.
Sorry.
For those of you who are new to our show, the Rotoscopers, or Animation Addicts podcast, is a podcast where animation lovers, young and old, come together, and every week we talk about an animated film, past or present, sometimes animated shorts. In this case, we are talking about the 1983 classic, Mickey's Christmas Carol.
I have always been a fan of this movie. This was definitely on my list of Christmas movies to watch every single year. I mean, it kind of got out of the rotation there for a while once Elf came around, but it was still there. Like, it's always one that I'm like, man, let's watch Mickey's Christmas Carol. That's a good one.
You know, with the advent of Elf, it was hard for everyone to compete for airtime.
It's true.
During the holidays.
I'm the Scrooge who really doesn't love Elf that much.
Oh my gosh, you really are a Scrooge.
I know.
That's like a one-way ticket on the naughty list, Morgan, if you don't like Elf.
Naughty.
What's next? I bet your favorite Christmas song is Santa Baby. That would just make it...
No,
totally...
I'm not that bad.
That is the worst Christmas song ever.
Anyway,
can you think of a worse Christmas song than Santa Baby?
Yes.
Last Christmas.
No,
I
love
you my
Lamb
heart.
Is amazing. I'm so glad.
I like that song.
Last
I like
Christmas.
The. Well, I like Last Christmas. You know, where would Lifetime movies be without it? They would have no source material for their films. But also, I like the Star Wars version. You know, the Last Christmas, my heart I gave you. Okay, we should ask people what they listen. If there are any animators that listen to us, we should ask them what they listen to while they're animating, or like artists, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a trick question because you should be listening to the Rotoscopers Animation Addicts podcast while you're animating. That is a source of inspiration, and I say that with all the humility in my heart. We're the best. But what, you know, what I wonder what animators listen to when they're in the zone, you know? Because you got to get in the zone. Don't let me into my zone. I'm definitely in my zone. Kanye West, wow, you really don't listen to pop music.
Yeah, okay. I don't listen to that either.
Kanye West isn't pop music, it's Illuminati. But anyway, so back to Christmas. That was a really crazy tangent. This was yet another adaptation of Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol. This is the Disney version. I think if you look on Wikipedia, there's 21, 22 different movie adaptations for this. It's basically a ghost story centered around Christmas and the redemption of Ebenezer Scrooge. Have you guys ever seen the Jim Carrey one? It's got a funky name. It's categorized as a like performance capture film in that it's CG, but it's all pretty much mocap.
I have not seen it yet.
It is really creepy.
I haven't, but it does look really creepy.
Yeah, it's very creepy. I saw it one year by myself, and it's definitely one of the more disturbing adaptations of it visually. But Jim Carrey does a pretty good job. You can't even tell it's him, like with the voice acting and stuff. So I think it's worth watching. And then there's the Muppet Christmas Carol, which I think is probably the best adaptation because Muppets.
It's true. At that point, yeah. There's nothing else you need to say.
Nothing else needs to be said. Hashtag nuff said.
So some general information about this movie. It came out in 1983, and it was actually released as... It's a short, a very long short by today's standards. It's 25 minutes long. But it was released with The Rescuers in December of 1983. And I'm just sitting here thinking, can you imagine sitting through a 25-minute short today and then going to your regular scheduled program?
I can't.
I guess you can't. I don't know. I couldn't. I think it would be, it'd be interesting to try and do this today because I just feel like so long. But then again, movies are already longer than, you know, 90 minutes of The Rescuers plus 25 minutes of The Short. So it's not a big deal. But anyway, the movie was directed by Bernie Mattinson, which I think is really cool because he's just definitely one of a Disney legend. He's actually still working at Disney today, which is so cool. He's been around just forever. And this guy is so cool. And props to him on this movie because I think he did a really great job, you know, adapting this movie and whatnot. So,
yeah, thank you, Bernie. And looking through the opening credits, I saw some pretty big names. John Lasseter is credited as a creative talent in this film. And Glenn King was an animator. And then Chris Buck, director of Frozen, and more importantly, Surf's Up, was he was just an in-between animator in this film.
Oh, and if he could go back and see himself an in-betweener. Back then.
Just a lowly little in-betweener. So cool. That's kind of cool.
So Mickey's Christmas Carol, I was reading online, it was adapted from Disneyland Records, a 1974 audio musical, which was called An Adaptation of Dickens' Christmas Carol. Mm. And it featured similar dialogue and same sort of cast of characters, although there were some changes with, like, the first and the last ghost. But interesting that they took that and they, you know, adapted it to screen. But obviously this is, like we've been talking about, adapted from Charles Dickens' original tale, which is just so classic. I mean, it's no wonder it's been adapted so many times. It's just, it very clearly is just this little, you know, vignette about Christmas and being stingy and giving. And I love it. I think it's just a perfect, you know, story. And I hope it's adapted a million more times. I think it's so good.
Yeah, totally.
I like that they keep, like, everything that's in this story because it is a timeless story with timeless principles and everything. That I like that they keep it kind of fresh in everybody's mind by readapting things. And the fact that it's most likely public domain, everybody is all the better.
Yeah, this is an interesting adaptation. I think one of the most entertaining parts about it are all the Disney cameos. Like, they're everywhere. So how does this fit in with Disney theories?
See, this was those movies that I was like, as I was looking around, I was like, wow, they really are all actors. You know how when you go into the Disney parks and the handlers for the walk-around characters are just like, oh no, Cinderella, she's a famous actress. She knows exactly what to do, da-da-da-da-da. She was in this movie and this movie. That's what she is. I'm like, it's true. All of these are now making these cameos in this movie. They're just actors. And they're all just playing a different part.
I think, okay, going back to, I hate to give so much credit to these infernal Disney theorists, but how do they account for the parks? Because are not the parks part of the Disney canon?
Yeah, but they exist in, like, a completely different world.
But if there's one unified Disney universe, like they're theorizing, then how can that be?
Then there's the real universe that we live in.
I don't know. So where does Enchanted fit into all those Disney theories? Because it's kind of both.
That's for another day.
That really is. We gotta get moving. All right. So I think I spotted all the cameos.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo Bros.
Good job.
Most of them. Okay.
Talking about just the cameos in the very beginning or just throughout?
Oh, no, throughout the film.
Okay.
Do you want to just go through all of them or do you want to talk to them as we see them?
No, take it away, okay, cameo man.
Yeah, so the Three Little Pigs and the Big Bad Wolf.
Yes.
That was a kind of a groundbreaking Disney short. And the reason why it was so big, we studied this semester, was that they featured individual personalities for each of the pigs. And that was the kind of the character design predecessor or prototype for the seven dwarves and their distinct personalities in Snow White.
Hmm.
I don't know about the wolf. I think the wolf's just nasty.
Yeah, he's just a mean old dude.
Yeah. Of course, you've got Fuzzy Wigs or whatever his name is actually Mr. Toad. And then I think I saw Lady Cluck in there.
She was dancing.
She was like dancing slash. Yeah, she was dancing.
She was dancing at the
past sequence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's also Uncle Waldo. I'm pretty sure I saw him.
Well, and the horse from.
Oh, yeah. Well, Master, it's a Mochica.
Yeah.
That guy. Ugh. Enabler. I'm glad he actually got a job instead of leading Mr. Toad down the path that rocks. Anyway, and then I think there was a couple of kids from Robin Hood, and I blatantly saw Skippy and Toby.
Wow, I did not see these kids at all.
Toby might tattle on you.
I saw, yeah, all of them. They're all just like sitting around at the dance party.
Oh, see, in the dance party, I'm too engrossed in Daisy Duck. I think she's amazing. So I think I've only ever paid attention to her.
Yeah, Daisy Duck. Then there's Chip and Dale. And then there's a lot of extras from Robin Hood, I think. All the poor folk are extras from Robin Hood. You know, they brought them over for this one, you know.
Well, I think also because Bernie Mattinson worked on Robin Hood, and most of these characters, they all have that same feel. I mean, it was only a couple.
Anthropomorphic.
Right.
The dwarves don't appear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're human-ish.
It's true.
Yeah, so
there are no humans in this story.
This casting call was only for anthropomorphic characters.
Discrimination much?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, they can do what they want. It's Hollywood, right?
Right.
And then there's the Mr. Badger and the mole, and then there's also the guy who looks like Sherlock Holmes, you know, Motor Mania. That guy, the water rat.
Yep.
They're in there, of course. They got a pretty prominent role. And there's the weasels, Wind in the Willows. One of them has the British Cockney accent, and the other one has kind of a sleazy Latino accent, you know? Master, the plans. Kind of like that, you know? No one went to his funeral. It's not a pretty picture. I don't like doing it. Anyway. So, yeah, all these cool cameos. They are actors. That's a great overriding theory, Chelsea. Yeah, we're introduced to Ebenezer Duck. I mean, Scrooge. I mean, wait, what? Is he, like, acting in this short, or is he himself? Scrooge McDuck, right?
Scrooge McDuck is not that bad.
He's Ebenezer Scrooge McDuck, or is he just Ebenezer Scrooge?
No, Ebenezer Scrooge. Because Donald is never referred to as Donald, it's Fred.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Isn't that weird?
So weird.
Okay, I have a few continuity issues. My first one is Fred. Why is he Donald? Fred is the antithesis of Ebenezer Scrooge, so why? And yet Donald isn't, he's like super cheerful. Donald's never the cheerful one. He's irascible and grumpy.
He's an actor.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Actor.
He had to be a nephew, so they couldn't put Goofy as the nephew. And I definitely wouldn't put Goofy as his, you know, his scoundrel of a partner.
Like, yeah, they all do role reversals, basically, except for Scrooge and Mickey. I mean, they're pretty mostly on character.
That's why they're
Mickey's,
out. They're
Mickey's
all
the
actors.
Perfect Bob Cratchit. Typecast.
Oh, he only gets those happy, jolly roles. Anyway, so we're introduced to Scrooge, and he's just horrible. Like, I love the part where he's talking about he bought his partner a headstone, and then he buried him at sea, and,
yeah,
you know, he's not letting Mickey use the coal, and then docking Mickey's pay. I'm just, it's just so sad. I don't know if I realized how horrible of a guy this was when I was watching this when I was younger, but watching it this time, immediately, I'm like, man, that's harsh.
Yeah, yeah. And check this out. 80% interest compounded daily on this one account. That's insane.
Yeah, he's making a lot of money.
Like, those are interest rates that...
Bucks.
I despise that chicken.
The eighth wonder of the world.
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
That's horrible. So that's an interest rate that credit card companies wish they could achieve.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not careful. Anyway, so I don't agree with Donald Duck being cast as Fred, but you know, whatever. I noticed when poor Bob Cratchit was sitting, you know, and he's got his little scarf. I've been animating a scarf for like the past like 8 months in this short film that I'm working on. So animating scarves is hard. I know. That was right about the time I noticed, the line, that Fred, always so full of kindness. He always was a little peculiar. I really love him.
There's so many good lines in this movie. Mm-hmm.
He's a very snarky Scrooge.
I like snarkiness.
I've always loved, like, Scrooge McDuck as a character in general. I just thought it was really funny because he's himself, but he's mean, but he's nice, but he's mean, and he's stingy, but yeah.
And he's got big bin of money.
That's true. He's got an entire swimming pool. Sheesh.
So I love when they're not peddlers. They're, you know, just charitable folks looking for a handout, but not really a handout. That's mean. I'm not saying they're looking for a handout. They're looking for alms for the poor.
Just the spokespeople for a charity. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, then he kicks them out and he's like, what's this world coming to, Cratchit? You work all your life to get money and then people want you to give it away.
You think he's going to go in a different direction, but he's just... I really like it.
Oh, it's too good.
There's this... it's just too good. Can't you say that Mickey looks really weird with a hat on when he puts it on before he goes outside?
Yeah, shouldn't be wearing a full-on hat like that.
And it breaks the canon of Mickey's ears.
So with Mickey's ears, basically in 2D, just the way that he is... They don't actually go with wherever his head is facing. They're not in perspective. They're always just sitting on the top of his head, facing you, perfectly circular. You know, if you were to actually do a 3D model of the Mickey based on the 2D form, it just wouldn't make sense because his ears would be moving all over the place.
Oh, man. Now I got to check this out because I'm going to look at Kingdom Hearts and then Epic Mickey,
mm-hmm.
You know, 3D. Games featuring Mickey Mouse and see if they do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not that hard to accomplish, like, coding-wise. I have an idea of how they could script something like that, but huh, that'd be interesting if they keep that in the games and stuff. But that is true. Whether he's in profile, three-quarter view, backwards, forward, whatever, his ears are always in that perfect Mickey shape.
Mm-hmm.
So Scrooge leaves, and then the movie gets real, folks. Begin of the Spooks. You know, Charles Dickens really liked to write ghost stories. It wasn't like a H.P. Lovecraft supernatural who was that other guy that was kind of messed up? Poe? But yeah, nothing like that. But anyway, I still got scared when I would see this as a kid.
Really?
He walks up to his door, and the knocker, which is weird anyway, morphs into Marley's head and goes, Scrooge. I always got freaked out by that when I was a kid because it's like, okay, if that can happen in a cartoon, then anything can happen. I don't want to like be opening a door and all of a sudden be like, Mason. I'm like, my old business partner who died. You know, also any part with the ghosts and then the part at the end with the fire and brimstone stuff just scared the noodle soup out of me when I was young.
This was during sort of the dark ages of Disney, you know, Black Cauldron followed a few years later. So
oh, yeah.
They definitely knew how to go there at this point in time. But I don't know, like nowadays, I think it'd be pretty cool to have one of those Jacob Marley door knockers. Like that would be the ultimate Disney fan if you could get one of those.
I wonder if there's a hidden one in one of the parks.
Ooh. Probably not. That'd be amazing if they hit it during Christmas time.
Yeah.
Yes, make it happen, also, Disney.
This is that weird era, not weird, but this was the before Bill Farmer era. So this is Hal Smith as Goofy.
I do not like.
It's so different since you guys made me watch a Goofy movie and
you
and all
loved
that
it.
Stuff. I tolerated it. It's okay. I mostly watched it for Powerline.
We all watched it for Powerline.
I'm telling you, he's like a goof version of Prince. He's just great. Anyway, he's very weird as Goofy.
He's very subtle. Like I feel like Bill Farmer as Goofy, everything's exaggerated, but this Goofy was just like almost monotone in a way.
Yeah. I have to go back to that podcast. Did you guys ever talk to Bill Farmer about taking the reins from Hal Smith? Was there another Goofy before him?
I think before him it was just it wasn't standardized. Every Mickey or, you know, Goofy thing, they would just have a new casting call and hire whoever.
Weird. Goofpocalypse.
Whoa, yeah. Man.
It's not Bill Farmer.
Bill Farmer, aw. I hope he has that gig for eons to come.
Yeah. Oh, but there is the classic Goofy yelp, you know, the, you know, falls down the, watch out for the first step. It's kind of weird in this part because, for one, he's Goofy, but then every once in a while he'll just snap into a direct quote from the original Charles Dickens story.
Yes.
You know, he's like,
out of character.
He's like, oh gosh, the floor's slippery. And then half a second he'll be like, tonight you will be visited by three spirits. You know, or your chains will be heavier than mine. I don't know. I can't pull it off because it's just so unnatural, like saying those original lines. And that's kind of a tricky thing with these film adaptations of A Christmas Carol. It's choosing how much you're going to stick to the source material. You know, Muppet Christmas Carol, which, you know, is the standard to which I hold all all Christmas Carol film adaptations to. It kind of does this. It everybody has their kind of Muppet personalities, but at the same time, they quote a lot directly from the source material.
I don't think I've ever seen that one all the way through.
Oh my gosh.
Just shame on me. It's on Netflix.
You gotta watch it because the best part is, is like, whatever happened to Tiny Tim? Well, Tiny Tim, who did not die. It's so funny. It's like Gonzo saying it. I don't know. It's a great Muppet movie. Oh, Tiny Tim? You think he's a heartbreaker in this movie? Tiny Tim in The Muppet Christmas Carol is like, he's like Super Saiyan Heartbreaker.
I don't believe it.
Oh my gosh. It's so heartbreaking. Anyway.
Honestly, I would really like to hear Bill Farmer do a complete overdub of this part.
That is an awesome idea.
Like, can we just call
him
up and say, Bill.
For our Christmas wish.
Yes.
We should have all the Rotoscopers fans tweet him.
Yes.
Our Christmas wish.
Bill does Marley. Hashtag Bill does Marley.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Bill does Marley. Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Oh, and he could just release it on SoundCloud or something, and all the fans will go crazy. We could post it on the site, and it'll be a huge thing. It's gonna be
that
so
is
cool.
Such a good idea. Holy
okay.
Cow.
Right, Rotoscopers fans, we are calling upon the power. We need you to tweet at Goofy Bill. That is his handle. And ask him for your Christmas wish as Tiny Tim, or however you want to put it. Your Christmas wish is for him to record himself doing Goofy's lines in a Mickey's Christmas Carol. Use the hashtag Bill Does Marley. And how do you spell Marley? Marley.
Yeah, Bill yes. Does Marley. Cool. We're gonna do this thing.
Mm-hmm. The day this episode comes out, let's all do it.
Today, yes. The Rotoscopers community will rise.
So stop right now and do it right now.
Everything you're doing. I don't care if you're doing laundry, if you're driving.
Just pause the podcast and
if you're working on Frozen 2 at the moment, stop what you're doing and tweet Phil Farmer. Anyway. So yeah, three spirits.
Which go by so quickly.
The first one is none other than Jiminy Cricket. Okay, this is how bad Scrooge McDuck is. Nobody rolls their eyes at Jiminy Cricket. You cannot hate Jiminy Cricket. He is so lovable. How could you possibly roll your eyes at him or find him annoying? But Scrooge manages to.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal. Anyway, they go to the past. Oh, Fizzywig himself!
Oh, this is probably the best scene of the whole movie to me. Or at least one of the most memorable. Because of Daisy Duck, basically.
How come Donald is the only one that talks like he does out of the ducks?
He has a speech impediment. Give him a
Even as an actor, he has a speech impediment. I just like it because you get to see like how he was a good person at one point in time and how, you know, he had like so many good things going for him and how he just let them all go away and because he was, you know, eventually became overtaken by money and greed. And it's just sad because she had given him a lot of like a long time. Like she even mentioned she has a honeymoon cottage that she's been living in. And I'm like, what is this? And I need one.
That's another term for like another house. Well, so you have to buy another house, Morgan, to have a honeymoon cottage.
I guess I need one.
It's called a timeshare.
Well, she was an hour late on her loan, and he foreclosed. That's how bad of a guy this guy is.
On his girlfriend.
That's worse than a text breakup.
It would have been his anyway if he would have just married her.
Wait, someone broke up with you through text, or someone foreclosed your timeshare?
Someone broke up with me via text.
Hey, me too.
I've never been foreclosed on, thank goodness. So that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Okay, so why do you love Daisy Duck so much, Morgan?
I think she's awesome. Now, it's funny because this is old Daisy Duck voice. The new Daisy Duck is by Tess McNeil, and she has a very, very distinct voice. Because she's done a lot of other things, but I don't know. I think Daisy's very underrated as a character, and I mean, particularly love her in this movie because there's really nothing to hate about her character in this movie. What are your feelings about Daisy, Chelsea?
Are you sure that was Daisy though?
Yes,
because Daisy always goes with Donald, so that's why I was confused. I was like,
actors.
It's true. Okay, she was just acting. Okay. No. You know, I really like her too.
That's a lot of set drama right there.
Right? Holy cow! I wonder how Donald.
Bub.
I know. I wonder how Donald felt about that.
Well, Chelsea asked, "Do you think that this is actually Daisy?" And I'm like, "Who else could it be? I don't know of any other female duck in this world."
There's only one.
Well, except for like the Abigail, and but those they don't count.
Yeah, those are much too young too.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Abigail and Amelia from Aristocats.
No, we're talking about...
not chickens, but geese.
We're talking about DuckTales, you know, because that's awesome. But there was a moment where I believe this was the first moment where I noticed somebody calling him Ebenezer.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, Ebenezer, Ebenezer, Ebenezer. And it struck back a memory of mine. I joined the church choir, and we were singing the song, "The Come Thou Fount," or "O Thou Fount of Every Blessing." And in the second verse of it, it says, "Here I raise my Ebenezer." And that one always made me think of Scrooge McDuck. Always. And so I was always
specifically
like,
Scrooge McDuck.
Specifically. Because in my world, this was the only one that ever existed. And so even at 25 years old, this was still the only one. But I was thinking about it. I'm like, what does that mean? Basically, the word Ebenezer comes from the Hebrew. It simply means stone of help. If you look at it this way, Ebenezer is like showing your gratitude. So because of his gratitude, he made this monument or this altar for the Lord saying thank you. And in my head, I was like, okay, what's the correlation here? And I thought, well, duh. I mean, there's obviously a reason why Scrooge is always unhappy. It's because he's not being grateful. And because he's not being grateful, you really can't be happy ever when you're not doing what you are, quote, called to do. And him specifically, his name was after a time of gratitude. So that's a little thing that I learned there. I thought it was
He's an irony.
Yeah.
Scrooge is.
Interesting.
You got a point there that he's definitely not grateful for people who do try to help him out, you know, because the Cratchits like do his laundry,
mm-hmm.
You know.
He's despicable.
Because he only pays him a halfpenny to do so.
A hay penny? How much is a hay penny?
Not as much as a farthing.
Your last farthing?
Mm-hmm.
Bless right. you, little sister. And then we go to the Ghost of Christmas Present. The giant is brilliant.
I love him.
Oh, that's the best one. They really expand that out as far
talk
as
talk about a cameo.
Well, he got quite a significant line. I'm wondering, like, as if you were, you know, the animator or the stories, the director on this, it'd be really interesting trying to cast this because you already have you're casting actors. You have a set canon of characters that fall within like the Disney canon of classic characters, Mickey, Donald, Goofy, and then you have these ancillary characters from the movies, and then trying to say, okay, we're looking for the Ghost of Christmas Present. Who do we want to cast?
He's supposed to be a big, fat, giant, jolly guy.
Is that how he is in the book?
Yeah, he's very, I wouldn't say he is indulgent, but his whole theme revolves around feasting on the bounties of life, the joys of life. Mm-hmm. Which isn't exactly gluttony, it's more of appreciation and providence. But anyway, I would have chosen Baloo the Bear, but Willie the Giant is pretty good too.
He's the only non-anthropomorphic creature.
He's the only humanoid.
Well, he's a giant, which may not be considered humans by some. Just unfair.
His animation is brilliant.
Yeah?
Marley was not as funny.
You say Glenn Keane animated on this, and I'm interested to know what scenes he actually did.
I like the part where he opens the he opens the house, you know.
Oh yes, like, I love the part where he has the little lamppost and then twists it, and then
yes, the flashlight gag.
I loved that so much when I was little. It's one of my favorite parts. And watching it now, there's like so much nostalgia just tied to that one little moment that I thought was so cool. Yeah. Ah, good times.
I always remember the scanty meal that the Cratchits have. It's like, what is that? A pigeon? And then they're all sharing a pea. You know?
Oh, yes. That's not good.
That's tough.
You realize they are in dire straits.
That is tough.
See, the original source material, he starts off at other locations and basically goes to show him like what most of the people are saying. Like most of the people hate him. Most of the people are like just
right because
really
he goes
bad.
To Fred's house. They're like playing charades.
Yeah,
and he's basically like, who's like the worst person you can think of? Oh, it's Uncle Scrooge.
See, there's so many good. Like moments that could have been included, and as I was watching this, and we moved really quickly from the first ghost to the second ghost, and this one we're basically over with, having just talked about this, and I wished for so much more. I was like, I just wish we could spend a little more time with the Cratchits and a little more time with this ghost, and I guess that was one of my biggest disappointments in this movie is like how short it is, and it is a short. That's the point, but I kind of wish it were.
It could have gone full-fledged.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they obviously had enough source material that they could have done it, and I think it would have been brilliant to, I mean, just to have a few more lines from the giant. Even Creeper Pete, he was, like, great.
I love Pete.
One thing that Muppet Christmas Carol did is they added songs, which takes up time, you know?
Uh-huh.
And there weren't any songs.
I actually like that it wasn't so song-focused.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Disney is known for that, but this one, I feel, stands quite well on its own without him.
Mm-hmm. It's hard for songs because songs, even though there are some songs that are so iconic and can stand forever, it's hard to get those. And yeah, it's so hard to make a good song that's not going to be trite, that's not going to be aged. I mean,
harmony.
That one never gets old. I think they mentioned that one the last like 5 episodes.
It's probably it's dude. On his favorites playlist, clearly.
Clearly.
It is not on my favorites playlist.
Well, anyway. You keep bringing it up as if it were.
I really do. Anytime a cheesy song comes up, I just think of that song. So anyway, Tiny Tim, he is always a heartbreaker.
Oh my gosh.
I'm coming, Father.
The moment his voice starts, my heart just melts. This is the perfect voice cast for him. Like, you can't listen to that without thinking, aww.
Yeah, Tiny Tim, he represents the real consequences of Scrooge's cruelty. Although, I don't really get it sometimes, continuity-wise. Like, okay, so Scrooge is like, he's a nice guy, you know? But apparently, the giant says that there's a lot of things wrong with him physiologically. you know, he is sick.
I thought
sick.
He was, like,
he
just
sickly.
Deformed.
I am ugly, and you are deformed, and I am deformed. I think, is it polio? Maybe it's polio. That's why he, that would explain the crutch.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not like there
Which
was a cure
is not
for
really
polio back
Scrooge's
then.
Fault.
So, like, yeah, it's not Scrooge's fault, but could lack of nourishment because he wasn't paid well enough to get some good food down the boy? Could that be the causality behind it? Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is Scrooge, he's good in the end. You know, he loves Christmas and he loves everyone. But how does that make Tiny Tim live?
Just got more food. Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Then we have the super cheesy line from the giant, I foresee an empty chair in that at that table. You know.
Well, the actual story never shows you what happens to Tiny Tim.
Awesome.
I thought there's two times when he says, God bless us, everyone, and then he comes and gives the plumpest goose to the Cratchits.
Yeah, God.
And that's
yeah,
when Tiny
exactly.
Tim says, God blesses everyone
yeah,
again.
Yeah,
but it doesn't, like, at that, after, I mean, it doesn't show a year later.
Day after Christmas.
Okay, so maybe he dies, but at least he died.
At least he dies happy. Oh, it's so bad.
With a full belly.
Yikes. Well, what's going to happen to him?
Well, you think the ghost of Christmas Present knew what would happen either way. So if he was going to die either way, I don't think he would have wasted his time showing him dying based on Scrooge's actions, right?
Okay, here's my theory. Wheels in my head have been turning.
It was also the very first time that he ever met, like, he'd never met this child, and yet this child had love for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah. Maybe that.
We have to thank Mr. Scrooge. Oh, that moment. I'm like, you are too pure. You are too good for this world.
A little heartbreaker.
Maybe that's why he died. He's just too good for this world. They didn't need him here.
Holy cow. That's getting deep. Okay, one thing's for sure. In the vision of the ghost of Christmas future, he sees them mourning the grave of Tiny Tim. And then he sees his own. So maybe that... Maybe what they're trying to say is that, hey, maybe Tiny Tim will die of polio, and he will never see the potential of his life. But for the short time that he was on Earth, he was very pure and charitable, and he had that light inside of him. Scrooge had his whole life, and he died an old, miserable man having wasted his entire life. So maybe that's what the parallel they were trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm sure there's all sorts of, like, journals and all sorts of analyses and critiques of the original story.
I have to go in and read it now. I feel like I have, but I haven't.
I read it in sixth grade.
Who was this unfortunate man? Whose grave is it? Why, Mr. Scrooge, it's yours!
Creepy Pete was the best.
He's so good.
Oh, Peg Leg Pete is amazing.
And I love that he smokes this big old fatty cigar.
This big old cigar, you know? That's the Grim Reaper for you.
Mm-hmm. You think if they made this movie nowadays... They would show that?
No, they would not.
So stupid.
I think they would.
Cigars and cigarettes are here for an effect. It's not like when I ever saw that, I was like, whoa, man, I want to smoke.
Like, I want to smoke bad, man.
Okay, wrong.
Oh, wrong kind of smoking?
Wrong kind of smoking, I guess.
Tobacco a gateway to the gateway? I would. You never had a hankering for a Christmas cigar?
No, this movie did nothing for me.
It shows how much I know about tobacco.
All of us.
It'll kill you! One injection of weed will kill you. Yeah, I think Pete was like a fitting fit for this, you know? Well, who better to play the nastiest, most ominous character in the film? Olaf.
Yeah, but he was the ghost. I mean, like, was he supposed to be a good guy? He just had him... mean demeanor, but I mean all the other ghosts were good.
He's got a dirty job.
Yeah,
he's the most frightening of the spirits.
That's true.
So Pete is with his horrible laugh and his smoker's cough and the smoke and the fire and brimstone. It's scary imagery. He's falling down. He gets pushed down into his grave. The coffin is just full of like fire and brimstone. It's very scary.
I never want to be pushed into my own grave.
Yeah, that would imply that you're not dead.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm fine being pushed into it if I'm dead, but yeah, not the undead part. Mm-mm.
Yeah, and so it was all just the bedsheets. That seems to be a common theme. See, I've never read the original, so I guess he does. That's the whole point. He gets tangled in his bed sheets, but like everyone gets tangled into the bed, and every Scrooge gets tangled in their bed sheets. It's like a tradition with this
classic
film adaptation. Oh, the classic gag. Just like it was just the cat, and it is. It does go by really quick.
Yeah, then we're done.
Because all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're done. Oh, that only took 5 minutes. Oh, it's been the whole night. Oh, it's Christmas Day. Oh, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, and he's transformed into this completely unrecognizable person.
Transformed and roll out.
Mm-hmm.
They should make a Transformers Christmas character. Christmas Carol.
Whoa, that's taking it too far, man.
Megatron Scrooge. Anyway, I have all these ideas. I should put them on copyright or something. How do you do that? Anyway, Christmas morning.
There's two ways I can tell you later.
I haven't missed it. I haven't missed Christmas. And then, I like he's like, holy cow, 10 gold pieces. That's not enough. All right, you drive a hard bargain. 20 gold pieces. So many gold pieces that your pants fall off. The old man's gone crazy. There should be an alternate take on this story where everybody just thinks Scrooge has gone crazy, and they throw him in the mental asylum.
That would be awesome.
And it's that dude from Beauty and the Beast that takes him away.
Spend the night in the asylum.
That's absolutely despicable.
See, he should have been in this movie. Well, he's human, but...
And he's also didn't come out for another 10
well,
years.
Well, that's right. He hadn't been invented.
He could have appeared in this one randomly, and then it was like a Disney Easter egg, you know, instead of showing, like, Pixar, they show a little snippet from their new movie in the current movie.
I like those.
This one, they could show it 10 years before the movie comes out. We're just going to slip it in.
Hey, 10 years they've been rusting. That doesn't fit.
Time Vortex.
That explains, okay, two things to unify all of these Pixar, these Disney theories and subsequently destroy them. The Time Vortex and the fact that all of the Disney characters are actors within their own universe. So you don't know what's part of the unified universe and what's not.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're all actors.
Arguing about it.
Am I just creating a straw man argument with this?
Mostly, yeah.
Basically.
One of the best parts is when he goes to Cratchit's house.
And he tries to act like old Scrooge.
All right, did anyone notice that he stuffed a cooked goose into a burlap sack?
Yes.
That's unhygienic, but then again, it was the 1890s. Or
yeah, whatever. I mean, that's completely normal practice.
Poop in your kitchen. But anyway, yeah, he tries to be all tough. And he's like, Bob Cratchit! Oh, yes, Mr. Scrooge? I don't know, I can't even remember that scene. Oh, yeah, he's going to make him his business partner.
Yes, he does make him the business partner.
I'm giving you a raise, and I'm making you my business partner.
I love the little bear that pops out, or, you know, kind of spoils his plan.
And
of course, Tiny Tim sees it. It's like, ooh, gimme, gimme, gimme. And he tries to stick it in his pocket, and he's trying to pull it out of his pocket. And, you know, then he spoils it by saying, toys!
That's right.
That's all kids want. He doesn't need food. New toys!
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, wait.
I pretty much loaded up on chocolate all Christmas.
During this section, but can we talk about the Disney canon, the Mickey canon, and Mickey's children? Who are they, and what are their names?
At some point in between Steamboat Willie and Fantasia, I am guessing Mickey was wed to Minnie, or they had children anyway, which would be more scandalous. But given Minnie's original occupation as a Hoochie Mama dancer, we don't know how promiscuous she is. I think Minnie is a very enigmatic character, and more research needs to be done on her. All in all, they could be his nephews. And since they are actors,
Morty
they appeared as his children.
His nephews' names are Morty and Ferdy.
Okay, so Morty and Ferdy. So I think they're his nephews, right? But since they're actors, as we've established, they appear as his children.
Uh-huh.
But they never say anything. There's like, isn't there a boy, a girl, and Tiny Tim?
Yeah, so, yeah, in that movie. But in... Just as Donald has nephews, Mickey has two nephews, Morty and Ferdy, and then Minnie, of course, has to have two nieces, just like, Daisy Duck has, you know, it's May, June, and April. But these ones are Millie and Melody, and they basically look exactly like Minnie Mouse.
Okay, but Morty, is that a, what about Morty? Is that a reference to Mortimer Mouse?
Yes, Mortimer Morty is...
You know who Mortimer Mouse is, right? He was like an anti-Mickey. He was like a mm-hmm. not a villain, but like a rival of Mickey's
He says Mortimer Mouse or Mickey's off-time rival of the same name. They should not be confused with him, basically.
Okay. Well, all right. I'll take it.
So officially, Mickey Mouse does not have children. So they are just, you know, relatives.
Good to know.
But we're hired for the part.
Maybe he's just a lifelong bachelor. Yeah.
Mickey and Minnie did get married, didn't they?
I don't think they did. I think it was always just like a...
They just did it for show.
No, they did in one of those other shorts they did. I remember them getting
married. Actors, they got married in one of the... Like, what? Prince and the Pauper? Yeah. They probably got married.
Here's what it comes up. Because
they're actors.
According to Walt Disney, Mickey and Minnie have never been married on screen, but in 1933, during an interview, he said, in private life, Mickey is married to Minnie.
Whoa. Hey, you heard it from Walt Disney himself.
What it really amounts to is that Minnie is, for screen purposes, his leading lady. So, not officially married, but in their private life, I guess they are married.
Ooh, well, well.
So much drama. So much drama.
Holy cow, this goes very deep.
Well, later on, the voice actors for Mickey and Minnie were actually married.
But does that mean that the characters...
Ugh.
I just thought it was cute.
It's gone full circle. Yeah. And then that's the end, isn't it? Yeah.
God bless us, everyone.
God bless us, everyone.
Then cue the joy to the children everywhere. I can sing that whole thing.
I can see that.
I know someone commented on our Facebook page. They wanted Chelsea to release a CD singing Christmas, Disney Christmas songs or Disney songs, and I don't know why people aren't asking for me to
if
say
she doesn't,
my songs.
If she doesn't yodel in that CD, I'm not buying it. Sorry, Chelsea.
That's the only way I'll get you to buy anything of mine is if there is a song with a yodel in it.
Yep.
I'll keep that in mind.
We still need to do a Rotoscopers music album.
We do.
Yes.
I imagine it being something like the Duck Dynasty Christmas CD. Except maybe less chaotic.
You guys all just need to come out to Nashville one time. And we'll get all of, like, a couple of other people together, my friends. We'll get it recorded, and we'll put out our own album.
I don't know. I've heard it's pretty hard to get musicians in Nashville.
No, it's really easy. They're everywhere.
I'm just kidding. Oh, okay. That was a joke.
So, this is a Christmas Carol question, but did all those things, meaning the dream, really happen? Was it a dream? Or did he really see the ghost of Marley? And did he really see the ghost of Christmas past, future, present, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so what are you trying to say? That this was all a dream? This was all a parallel universe? Like, what are you talking about?
Do you think it was a dream? Or do you think he really had those ghosts visit him?
I think he really had the ghosts visit him. Because when he goes and he talks to everybody, he, like, knows different things that he wouldn't have known before because he never paid attention before.
Like, how is your lima bean dinner?
Basically, yeah. Like, he wouldn't know exactly what to bring, you know, for certain people.
Yeah.
Like a teddy bear for a little kid. No kid would do that. Except for Tiny Tim.
Who invited that kid? But anyway, Well, he does seem to have a greater understanding of Bob Cratchit's situation after the experience. So, yes, maybe he was actually visited by the spirits who showed him all these things, or his subconscious mind made up these scenarios to amplify what he was subconsciously thinking, which is that he could actually feel sympathy for Bob Cratchit and therefore charity. You know, maybe it was there, but his subconscious mind made it real. Gosh, I have no idea. I'm stumped on this one.
Well, guess we'll have to be research. I'm sure all the, you know, Charles Dickens super fans are like, oh my god.
All the people who actually read it are like, stop. Anyway,
so what do you guys want to rate this movie?
Do I call it a movie? I mean, it's just a Christmas short.
What do you want to rate this Christmas short?
All right, thanks. Oh, I'll do 3 out of 5 stars. Like, it's nothing like remarkable, but it's still pretty entertaining, and I still think it's a pretty good short film. They could have had songs. I can't believe I'm the one to say this, but I think they could have.
I know. I'm like, you're the one. To say, right, they could have added a couple songs that would have made everything that much better.
Well, they really could. You know, that's why I like the Grinch so much. Maybe it would have been more memorable if they had songs, like original songs. You know, Disney could have done that. Anyway, 3 out of 5 stars.
As far as a short, like, because this is not going to go on the same level as a full-fledged feature film. So I'm grading it as a short. As a short, I like it. And I'm going to give it, like, 4.5 stars because there really wasn't a lot that they needed to add. Like, they cut it down to the bones to keep it into the short length. And so, grading it on the short length, like, standards, I'm going to give it that because it does have epic replay value for me. And it is iconic in many, many ways. So, yeah, that's where I'm going to leave it.
I'm going to give it 4 stars. I love this short. I'm not going to call it a movie. And I just think that they did such a great job with it. And it's short, obviously, and to the point. But the characters and the quotes, just so good. And I know it's because I grew up watching this. I'm sure people who've never seen this movie are going to rate this, you know, 1 out of 2. Well, that's pretty good.
That's better than most.
But I don't know. It's nothing amazing, like Mason said. But it's really not bad at all. It's pretty decent. So 4 stars.
Okay, shall we go into the mailbag?
Mail time.
Our first one comes to us from Mark, and he says, "Hey, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. I don't celebrate Christmas, but I tend to have a predilection for Christmas movies, especially those based on A Christmas Carol, which I just think is an awesome story. So I was quite excited you guys were going to review this one. My question is, there have been many adaptations of A Christmas Carol in both film and TV, and both live action and animated. If y'all were going to make another..." I like how he said y'all, just so you know. If y'all are going to make another animated adaptation of the story, what would your voice cast be? Looking forward to hear your answers. P.S. If I may make a special request, just to keep it in the spirit, I think the Rotoscoper should end with a sing-along. And the song I really would like you to hear you three sing is Thank You Very Much, or at least one version of it from the musical movie Scrooge with Thank You Very Much. Thank You Very Much. I remember that one from Mark.
Okay, Mark, regarding like sing-alongs on the show, like it's really hard for us to do it because, you know, with us Skyping from 3 different places and bandwidth issues, and there's never really a 100% sync up between when we're talking in our microphone and when it shows up in our speakers. And so I don't know how we would do that. See, one day, all of us are going to have enough money to, mostly just me, to fly out to like Arizona or someplace, and we'll all meet up and we'll do like all 3 of us kind of things, like YouTube videos. Well, maybe we'll do a special podcast. Maybe we'll do, okay, tell you what, if we ever meet up, all 3 of us, we will do all the sing-alongs that we could do one night only.
This will be, it'll be a Google Hangout. That's what we'll do. And we're just going to sing along to all the Disney songs. And this one will be one of them.
Can I put a ban on Let It Go though?
Sure.
Okay. Settled then. No, Let It Go.
As far as voice cast goes, I don't know. I liked the voice cast they had with most of these. I think I would have done, you know, all we just needed in there was Bill Farmer as for Goofy, and I would have been happy.
Yeah. I would make a completely different adaptation. I would make like a pop music adaptation. So Scrooge is Kanye West, obviously. And he's visited by the spirit of Christmas past, who is traditionally this like cute kind of baby fairy kind of thing. So obviously Taylor Swift. And the ghost of Christmas present, it can't be John Goodman because he's not a pop singer. Probably Macklemore because I think he's the least liked of all the 3 spirits. And so that would make sense for Macklemore being him. And then, oh, the Ghost of Christmas Future. It would probably... Oh, who's that guy? Bublé.
Michael. Bublé.
Yeah, Michael Bublé would be that guy. And I would direct it, and it would be amazing.
All right. I'd go see that one.
Bob Cratchit will be Keenan from Keenan and Kel. He can be a pop singer.
Why not?
Anyway. And here's another one from Dustin Lee Richardson. Dustin says, "What's up, rotoscopers? Fellow rotoscoper Dustin here from Sacramento, California. I just wanted to say how much I loved your review of Big Hero 6, and I agree with all the points made. I give this movie a 4/5 stars. Oh, I think he means 4 or 5 stars. Oh, 4 out of 5. Oh, you're so smart. I saw Big Hero 6 with my little brother. We had a great time together. We laughed hard. Also, now that we're getting older, we were able to talk a little more intelligently about the film afterwards, such as what the emotional strengths of the movie were, and how cool it would be to have our own microbots and or Baymax healthcare robot. This movie was fun and engaging, kept me guessing on who the villain was slash their motives, and it had some very good emotional beats, though I felt it could have improved on one of them. I love the animation, especially for Baymax. Baymax had no overlapping action for a lot of the film, which was a great choice. Mason, Fred is my favorite character as well. He's a lot like me. Also, when you said he was like the Shaggy of the group, you and I both said, zoinks, at the same time. Animators think alike, I guess. Oh, thank you. Awesome impression of the policeman in the movie and Stoic the Vast, too. That was perfect. Did I do Stoic the Vast in that episode also?
You always do Stoic the Vast.
Hey, it's one of my favorite voices, Chelsea.
Whenever the time comes, you always want to throw that in.
Yep.
Mine's more of an Irish thing.
We should have a Celtic episode. This, and then he goes on to say, Ratatouille, this is my French friend Julian's favorite animated movie. Oh, good to know. It's awesome. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it. It's in my top 5 Pixar movies. Not sure which number, but anyway, I hope you all have a great Thanksgiving. TTFN. P.S. If you want, you can check out my blog where I posted my review of Big Hero 6 not too long ago. And listeners, if you want to check out Dustin's blog, it's animationistlife.com. blogspot.com. So it's like animation is life, but there's a T in between the is and the life. It's complicated. Animation is to life. You probably had to go with that because someone already took this animated life.blogspot.com. Oops!
That's probably what happened.
Okay, I just talked to Shanna and she explained to me that it's animationist to life.
Animationist.
Like you're an alchemist, you're an illusionist. Michael, I'm not a magician. I'm an illusionist. Animationist life.
Okay.
Sorry, Dustin, for butchering that.
Thanks, Shanna.
Chelsea says thanks. You saved the podcast.
All right. This next one is from Rachel. She says, love the podcast. Great job. I recently saw Mickey's Christmas Carol and enjoyed it. The script is very witty. Scrooge is more of a smart aleck than in other versions. My question is, why make it so short? They had between 1981 and 1985 with no animated releases except for re-releases, and they zip through each of the spirits. Why not make these moments longer and make a feature? But I still enjoy it, and it does a good job of tempering the scary moments, which can be tough with this story. It has a very nice message about kindness and allowing others in your life. Merry Christmas, Rachel W. Thanks, Rachel.
Cool. So if you had made this full length, you would have gotten The Muppet Christmas Carol, which is one. Okay, hold on. It's one of my favorite Christmas movies, except for this horrible, stupid, boring song that they throw in between Sir Michael Caine and his love interest during the Ghost of Christmas Past Present. And the Ghost of Christmas Past in that movie is weird and scary and troubling. And disturbing, but that song, I think it's When Love Is Lost, is the most boring thing ever. It's so boring that if you get it on demand, like if you have like cable or digital cable, they actually cut that song out. And it's so merciful. I love that version, but I don't know. I'm fine with the fact that it's so short, but they do zoom through all that. They do just fly through all the ghosts. Very, very true, Rachel.
They do. And I wish they would have, I mean, I can see why, as we talked about during the main discussion. I can see why they cut them, but at the same time, it would have been cool.
For the argument of making it longer, I think this had been the first time Mickey Mouse had appeared in a Disney short since like the 50s. Since the 50s.
Ooh.
And I got that off of IMDb, so I'm not sure if it's reputable or not, but for the hardcore Mickey fans, like, it must have been terribly depressing to only have a fleeting glimpse of him. And also, I think this was the first time ever that Mickey Mouse was voiced by Wayne Allwing. I think you say his name. He was also one of the Weasels. Versatile. This next one is from a mystery writer. The only thing they left is the letter S. So, Rotoscoper S, They say, "Hi, Rotoscopers. As animation fans, I thought you guys might be interested in something I created. I wrote a feature-length screenplay for a Frozen sequel based on the premise that it might plausibly come out of Walt Disney Animation Studios. It's strictly canon, easily PG or G, and it strives for consistent characterizations with Frozen. Here's a three-sentence hook." Are you ready, Chelsea?
So ready.
Okay, here's the pitch. 10 months after the events of Frozen, a royal wedding is approaching. But when Kristoff disappears 2 weeks before the wedding, Anna, Elsa, Olaf, and Sven go on an adventure to find him. They all discover along the way that making a new family together will be hard work. Wow. S, this mystery writer, goes on to say, "I made a trailer of sorts made of key screenshots of the script, which you can find here," and they provide the link. And then a screenplay PDF complete with endnotes is here, and they provide a link to it. Or if you prefer fanfiction.net, oh, thank you, I definitely do, they provide the fanfiction.net link. Enjoy. Sorry, S, I don't know if you've been listening long enough, but like I always mention how much I hate fanfiction on the podcast, but I will make an exception for you. Well, more power to you. That's awesome that you like, okay, I would have less of a problem with fanfiction if people stuck to canon. And I know that's not the point of fan fiction, you know, creativity, you know, you can make your own world. But the fact that you made a point of making it compatible with the Disney universe, I'll have to see, you know, because I haven't read it. But I think that's pretty cool. And I'm looking forward to watching your trailer, looking at your screenplay and stuff. I'll send it to my film snob friends in my undergraduate program and see what they think of it. It's always a good refiner's fire when you want to present something to someone.
It's true. Hello, Rotoscopers. I love your podcast. I enjoy the different perspectives each of you bring into the light. I can't wait to hear what your perspectives are on We're Back will be. I think you should do the movie Treasure Planet. This movie is an amazing mixture of CGI with cartoon animation. The story is captivating and has tons of funny, quotable lines. In all, I would rate Treasure Planet 4 out of 5 stars. It is a stunning movie, and I think would enjoy it. Sincerely, Alice. I have actually seen this. Per Mason's... Actually, no. Treasure Planet was not one that I saw. So I need to see this. I actually saw...
The one you're searching for is Atlantis.
No. I was actually thinking of the Don Bluth one. The Titan A.E.
Oh, Titan A.E.? Hey, how'd you like it?
I like Titan A.E.
That's Matt Damon. That's a young Matt Damon.
I know. It was kind of weird. Like, they had, like, different spots. But anyway, Treasure Planet. I haven't seen that yet, and I need to see it. So eventually we will do that. Maybe when we do our space series. Because at some point in time, we do need to do a space series.
Space.
The Final Frontier.
These are the adventures of Captain James T. Kirk. Captain of the Starship. I used to know it. Dad taught me it a long time ago.
Yeah.
I never watched Star Trek. Anyway. Okay. I've never seen Treasure Planet, and I need to see it. Maybe I'll see it this week. I've made it a goal of watching a film every day this week. Maybe I should watch it tomorrow on Netflix.
There you go.
Cool. Treasure Planet is interesting. I don't know about 4 out of 5 stars, but I haven't even seen it, so I guess I'll just have to give my own rating when I see it.
Yeah. We're glad that you're catching up as far as getting to hear about We're Back, or apparently this is an older email. But thanks, Alice.
All right, folks. Strap yourselves in, because this next one by Rob L. has to do with a Disney theory. It's entitled The Time Periods of the Disney Princesses. The theory takes into account as much material the Disney company has created for these characters, including statements, settings, and cameos in feature films, TV series, art books, commentaries on DVD/Blu-ray bonus features, sequels, also the original sources of the movie for backup, just so all the princesses have a placement. This theory is dealing with the Disney canon film characters, not Merida, as she is Pixar. Why you gotta discriminate? Why you gotta discriminate against us Celtics? Ride your dragon over to this Robert's house. Dad, we don't use our dragons for destruction, Dad. You know, you see a dragon, you just want to kill it, Dad, and I think that's wrong. Dad, dragons. But anyway, the Disney princess universe starts in the Hellenistic time period of Aladdin. This is proven due to Aladdin and Jasmine meeting Hercules in their crossover episode of the Hercules series, Hercules and the Arabian Night, which I did see. This is amazing. Commenting on that. Okay. Here's Rob again. Furthermore, Ariel's lifespan must be beyond 300 years, because in the Aladdin TV series episode Elemental, My Dear Jasmine, Jasmine's hair gets dyed red, and the mermaid who captured her said she looked like every other princess under the sea, clearly referring to Ariel. After Jasmine would be Mulan due to the Ballad of Hua Mulan, which was written during the Wei Dynasty. That would set the movie at about 386 to 534 for her time period. Aurora, 14th century, is explicitly stated in her film. Pocahontas, 15th, 16th century, due to the first contact between Great Britain and what would become the state of Virginia. Belle, late 18th century, as confirmed by Glenn King in the second disc for the second platinum edition for Beauty and the Beast. Wow, you got your sources, like, straight. Mm-hmm. Several of the Disney princesses live in the 1800s. Ariel lives during the early to mid-19th century, as heavily implied in the TV series, the episode Metal Fish, which shows that she meets Hans Christian Andersen. Anna, Elsa, and technically Rapunzel also lived during this period of time during the 1840s, as confirmed in Disney's The Art of Frozen, along with Rapunzel's cameo in the film confirming her placement. In addition, it is implied Cinderella also lives in the 19th as well, due to the cameo of the King and the Grand Duke attending the wedding of Eric and Vanessa. Finally, Snow White is the only one who had no confirmed placement, though however it can be implied it takes place in the late 17th/early 18th century, due to when the original tale was written. The 19th century princesses, they all come after Tiana, or before Tiana, who lived during the 1920s. All right, Rob, your theory is pretty solid so far, but I have to totally disagree about Snow White. Snow White is Renaissance/medieval times, and, medieval to Renaissance times. Maybe a little bit of post-Renaissance, but not more than that. It doesn't matter when the original fairy tale was written. If you look at the movie and like the architecture and everybody's wardrobe and stuff, it's clearly in the Dark Ages or something like that. But anyway, other than that, I'd say your theory is rock solid.
It doesn't really seem like a
maybe,
theory.
But this is more like a compiled, like a comprehensive, well-researched timeline.
Yeah,
in the Disney universe.
For sure. I'll give him that.
My only question is, how do you account for Kingdom Hearts? I'm done. Drop the mic.
That would be accounted for by the Time Vortex, Mason.
Ooh.
The entire series of Kingdom Hearts happens within the Time Vortex.
Now, is the Time Vortex something you go into? Like, does it have a volume, or do you just pass through it? Or is the Time Vortex more like the Twilight Zone, where it's an entire different dimension?
I would say it's an entirely different dimension, but it mirrors all of the other dimensions.
That would be the only possible explanation for how a spaceship made of gummy bears can do interplanetary space travel.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm agreeing to, but what is that from?
In Kingdom Hearts, they fly around in a spaceship that's a gummy spaceship.
Oh, well, yeah, then totally. I'm just figured it out. Go me. All right, our next one is from Mike. Mike says, "Hey, Rotoscopers, I really enjoyed your review on We're Back." This was a while ago. Believe it or not, my entire first grade class held this movie with a higher regard than Citizen Kane. As an adult, my head was spinning with every logic-defying scene. But at the age of 6, it all made complete sense. What bugs me most, though, is how Screw Eyes completely failed to realize just how scary clowns can be. A man with a circus of horrors can do better than Stubbs. It's very true. The film went through a kind of production hell that resulted with a very different movie. John Malkovich, the original voice of Screw Eyes, became a somewhat outspoken critic of the movie, saying it was, quote, completely bureaucraticized.
Bureaucrat. Do you know what it is?
Oh,
yeah. Bureaucratized.
Yes.
Bureaucratized. Bureaucratized.
P.S. There actually was a Rex balloon at the 1993 Macy's Parade, but high winds caught the balloon and caused it to lift over the nearby sidewalk. The head of the Rex balloon struck a protruding streetlight and popped. Keep up the good work, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Mike. Although I got to be curious, like, how many of your first grade class actually watched Citizen Kane able to compare We're Back to it? Anyway, I know what you're saying. Citizen Kane is widely regarded as the best film, Western film of all time, which is totally untrue. It's actually Jurassic Park, but no one really takes my side on that. But speaking of which, yeah, so we had a lot of fun on our We're Back podcast. I remember that. Anyway, that's sad about the Rex balloon. That would have been cool to see in 1993.
I vaguely remember something like that.
Did candy pop out of its head when it popped?
That would have been awesome.
No. Yeah. Anyway.
On behalf of all the people who have assembled here, I would merely like to mention, if I may, that our unanimous attitude is one of lasting gratitude for what our friend has done for us today. And therefore, I would simply like to say, thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me.
All right, folks, you have made it to the end of our fabulous 2014 Christmas episode, and we are so excited to have you guys listen to us, and we love our fans. For show notes, you can check out rotoscopers.com. Okay, when referring to this specific episode, like on social media, use the hashtag AnimAddicts83. This is our 83rd episode, and golly, we've gone for a long time. We're closing in on our 100th episode. Woo-hoo! Isn't that great?
That's exciting.
Yeah. For show notes, links, and more, you can visit us at rotoscopers.com/83. You should be avidly, like, subscribed to rotoscopers.com in the first place, but each individual page for each individual podcast episode is a great way to kind of get the most out of your listening experience. So we always post links, extra stuff, talk about, tangents that we talked about. So yeah, rotoscopers.com/83 will take you to this episode. All right. Be sure to use the hashtag AnimAddicts when like tweeting about this podcast episode or the podcast in general. We want to go viral like Jimmy Fallon does. And you can find us on Hypeable and Animated Views. Also be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, and we're also available on Stitcher Radio.
We want to give a quick thank you out to the last couple of people who have been giving us ratings on iTunes. We have got one from DLR4, and he says, Rotoscopers rocks. Ryan in Arendelle gave us a review. Also, Jacqueline Claire. Thank you guys so much for giving us those five-star reviews. That's really nice. Thanks. Every review counts, and every review is amazing.
You can find us on all social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. Oh, yeah, I recently got a huge influx of Instagram followers because we did a thing on the Rotoscopers Instagram.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Morgan. She's the administrator of the Instagram. Anyway, if you want to email us, with comments, concerns, complaints, hopefully not complaints, then email us at contact@rotoscopers.com. And you can always send an awesome voicemail, which we love, at rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can use the number 406-646-6575. And you can drop us a line, and we love to play the voicemails and comment on them on the show. This episode is brought to you by Amazon, which is your provider. Basically everything, especially this holiday season. If you want to support the Rotoscopers, use our Amazon affiliate link. That is rotoscopers.com/Amazon. You can do your shopping and support the Rotoscopers at the same time. We also have a store, and if you want to do some awesome Christmas shopping, and you want to get that truly unique gift that really says, I love you and I love animation at the same time, then don't forget to check out the Rotoscopers store. You can buy all your Roto merchandise, which right now is one item. It's our super awesome Rotoscopers t-shirt. So go to rotoscopers.com/store to check out our t-shirts. Look, check this out. You will not get a better deal than this. $12 for a shirt, $16 for a signed shirt. That's right. You can actually get our autographs on your very own Rotoscopers t-shirt for $16. That's one heck of a deal. Rotoscopers.com/store. Hey, our next episode, folks, is going to be our best of 2014 episode. So if you have a favorite Mason moment, a favorite Morgan moment, or a favorite Chelsea moment, or a favorite all three moment, or any of the other nine combinations of all three of us, then send us a voicemail or an email highlighting what your favorite moments are in all the episodes out of 2014, and we'll know to include that in our Best of 2014 episode. We're really looking forward to that.
All right, so this week, the Rotoscopers Awards are starting. Just head on over to rotoscopers.com/awards, and you can take part in our site-wide competition to see which was the best animated features of the year, who had the best sidekicks, the best soundtracks, voice acting. This is where you guys get to get your voices heard. So head on over to rotoscopers.com/awards to be a part of the action. Check us all out on our individual locations. You can find Morgan on Twitter and Instagram at Morgan Stradling. You can find myself on Twitter and Instagram, Chelsea Robson, and Mason, Twitter and Instagram at Mason SMTX. and as well as masonsmithportfolio.com and thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com. Until next Christmas. Bye, everybody.
Nailed it. Oh, I don't know. I can't do it. Mickey Mouse is very... It's too close to things like Gingerbread Man from Shrek. You're a monster! You know? Not the drop buttons! And then there's also Rob Paulsen, who has a very kind of Mickey voice.
Oh, yeah.
If there was like a sleazy punk Mickey who's just like totally lazy and kind of a stoner, then Rob Paulsen would probably... It's like Mickey's nephew who like runs away from home all the time and decides to crash at Mickey's place. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
And with that, another twit is in the can.
And with that, this 30-minute short took us 2 hours to record.
Wow. Talk about a time vortex. All right. Hey. I think that'll do it.
Yes, it will. All right.
I'm going to go eat some quiche.
Ooh, quiche. My specialty.
Nice.